Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. The time is, today is Monday, March 7th, 2022. The time is 9:01 a.m. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Hughes, Senator Stevens, Senator Machicki, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Holland. Thank you to Mary Gwen, our recording secretary, and Jake, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. The only item on today's agenda is Senate Bill 225 relating to teacher apprenticeship programs. We'll now bring Senate Bill 225 before the committee. This is the first of several scheduled hearings on 225. Mr. King, would you please take the presenter's table and provide us an overview of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed King, staff Senator Holland. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 225 is an effort by the Senate Education Committee to capture some of the low-hanging fruit when it comes to addressing our teacher shortage here in Alaska. The bill has several components, but this is just a starting place. The chair's office is already collecting ideas for how to make the bill better, either through changes to existing language or language that may be missing from the current version. Overall, the bill, it seeks to employ some of the innovative ideas and strategies that are being used in other states and to try to fill some of the gaps in our current statutes in order to address the teacher shortage that Alaska is currently facing. We'll learn more about that shortage next week when we talk to the school districts. We'll learn more about the teacher certification process today, and we'll learn more about what the current university system does in order to educate teachers in our state on your next meeting. Mr. Chairman, I'll walk through the sectional, and I'm happy to take questions as we walk through.
All right, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, the first section of the bill creates a pre-apprenticeship program where it directs the Department of Education to work with school districts to encourage high school students to enter the teaching field. It's a simple change. It happens on page 4. It's the first change in the bill. It adds an 18th paragraph to direct the Department of Education to establish a paraprofessional training program designed to prepare high school students for entry into the teacher registered apprentice program that's established later in this bill. Section 2 of the bill is a new program. It's a teacher residency program. Mr. Chairman, a teacher residency program, not to be confused with being a resident of the state, but to be the residency program is similar to a medical residency in that it's a structured environment for somebody that has the technical knowledge but lacks the practical experience. Do you want to brief at ease?
Brief it. Senate Education Committee is back on the record. Just make sure everybody had a current copy of the sectional analysis. Mr. King, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next change is, as we were discussing, again for the record, Ed King, the teacher residency program is created by Section 2 of this bill. The teacher residency program, again, akin to a medical residency program in which a aspiring teacher has the coursework that's required but lacks the practical experience of being in a classroom. And so it creates a structured environment so that the resident teacher would work as a co-teacher in conjunction with a mentor in order to gain that necessary experience to become an effective teacher. The teacher residency program is created in parallel to the subject matter expert certificate. And it's specifically designed for people that do not have that subject matter expertise but have a four-year degree. They've already met the degree requirement and are trying to become a teacher. It also creates the teacher resident certificate so that those teachers that are in front of a classroom are fully certified under a provisional teaching certificate. Mr. Chairman, the next section is on page 6, and this is a clarification for the current requirement for Alaska Studies and cross-cultural Multicultural education or cross-cultural communications. This is a current requirement in current law. However, in current law, the statute requires that training be 3 semester hours, which implies that needs to be a university-level course. We've heard feedback from stakeholder groups that it might not be necessary that be a university course, that perhaps that same training could be provided by another means so that the intent is met without it costing the cost of tuition for an aspiring teacher to become fully certified. So this change removes the 3 semester hour requirements and directs the Board of Education to adopt regulations that examine or that outline that coursework training or other examinations. Mr. Chairman, there's also a provision here it provides explicit authority to a school district to make their requirements for certification, meeting these requirements higher than the bar that's set by the board in the event that the districts are unhappy with the regulations that the board requires. Seeing no questions, moving to section 4, it begins on page 7. This is a change to the existing law as well under the OT2 certificates, which are for subject matter experts. These are teachers that have a 4-year degree and some expertise but don't have a teaching certificate. These professionals are in classrooms in front of students, gaining both practical experience while also doing the coursework. However, they don't have the strict requirement to co-teach with a mentor teacher like we're proposing in the residency program. What this section does is loosen up the timelines just a little bit so that people have more time to meet those requirements to become fully certified. It also expands the universe of eligible programs so that somebody in that environment can take a non-traditional pathway to a full certification rather than only allowing the regionally accredited, so read that as university level classes in order to meet that requirement. Turning the page to page 8, section 5 of the bill again creates a little bit more time for a subject matter expert, just a conforming change to the previous section. Section 6 also is a conforming change, providing the consistent timeline for a OT2 certificate to become fully certified. Section 7 is a technical change in the limited teacher certificates, which we'll learn about here shortly. These are certificates for people that don't have a 4-year degree, and they teach specific vocational or other Alaska Native language, cultural, military science, or vocational or technical courses. So think somebody that has expertise as a car mechanic teaching a shop class, for example. They don't necessarily need that 4-year degree, but their teaching certificate is limited to only that vocational training area of expertise. What this section does is removes the sentence for which the board determines by regulation that a baccalaureate degree training is not sufficiently available. The fear being that in the world that we live in today, where university courses are widely available on the internet, that might hinder the ability to hire somebody with that expertise. So just a clarifying change. Section 8 of the bill on the bottom of page 8 is a new teacher registered apprentice program. The teacher resident apprentice program is a pathway for a paraeducator to become a fully certified teacher. It's an apprenticeship program, Mr. Chairman, similar to any other apprentice program where you're working full time while you're doing the coursework and getting on the job training, which ultimately culminates in a 4-year degree and a full teacher certificate, so that these paraeducators that might not have the opportunity or the financial means to take the coursework that's required, this provides a pathway for those paraprofessionals to become fully certified teachers. On page 9, there's also the Teacher Resident Apprenticeship Program Fund. This is just a vehicle for the legislature to move should it decide that it wants to provide general funds to support the apprenticeship program. The bill also authorizes receipt authority for districts to use other means to pay for those apprentices, whether they are through scholarships or donations from private corporations or from Alaska Native corporations or from any other non-state funds. That just ensures that those funds are available for those districts to support their apprentice programs. And Mr. Chairman, the last section of the last two sections, section 9 is a just a clarifying change, adding that new fund to the list of funds, and section 10 is a repealer provision, and that's just a technical change because the competency exam was incorporated earlier in the bill into section subsection B of 022. The subsection C requirement is no longer necessary.
All right. Thank you, Mr. King. Are there any questions from the committee? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm really glad to see this. I give a lot of thought to it. I know from personal experience that there are people that should be teaching that have done a certification. But I want to make sure that on the other hand, certification is very important, and it makes sure that we have the best teachers in front of our students. Do you see this as any way weakening the certification process?
Senator Stevens, to the chair, that is not the intent of the bill. The intent of the bill is to provide alternative means to achieving that same standard, not to degrade the standard that's being required. And Ms. Meredith can speak more to what those alternative programs may look like that are already in existence, but that is not the intent here, is to just put warm bodies into classrooms. It is to ensure that that standard is still appropriately high, and that the ability to meet those requirements is as accessible as possible.
Thank you. If I could ask a question. To me, I think what I have seen in my experience in the villages of Alaska, in my district, is that there have often been some really highly qualified paraprofessionals who are probably in their 40s, maybe, who are really great teachers, but haven't been able to get a certification. And where does that come under this? They don't have a bachelor's degree. We need to help them get a BA. We need to help them get a certificate. Where does that fall under this? So people who have mostly women, who've had a lot of experience in the classroom, who are great paraprofessionals, who can't leave their homes because they have families, but would be very effective teachers. Where do they fall under this?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, the what you're describing is what I envision would fall under the teacher apprentice program, where you have somebody that is in a classroom already as a paraeducator, and creating a mechanism for them to also take the coursework and get credit for the on-the-job training that they're already doing towards completing that degree requirement. So if a person already has some college or has the necessary experience, they don't necessarily have to come in as a first-year apprentice. They can come in as a second or third-year apprentice, being closer to that graduation. But that's, if somebody doesn't have a four-year degree, the only option today is for them to teach under a Type M certificate, the 025 limited certificates for vocational training, or as a substitute, I suppose. But the intent here is to provide an opportunity for that person without a four-year degree, a pathway to getting fully certified. And that does include, we've spoken with the university to ensure that that coursework and training can be delivered remotely, so that a person does not have to leave their home district in order to complete the process.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate making an attempt to address a real need.
Thanks, Senator Stevens. Senator Hughes?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Ed, for the summary. So I'm glad to hear that part of this is credit for on-the-job training, and I just would like to understand better how that works, because right now that you have to do the full four-year program, for instance, at the University of Alaska or elsewhere in the U.S. So now we have somebody with a bachelor's or in their final year of a bachelor's, they can go in the residency program, but they still have to get the teacher education piece, and then you have the paraprofessional who also has to get that education piece. And that education piece needs to be streamlined because they're on the job. They're going to, I imagine, teacher staff meetings. I mean, they are picking up a lot of things on the job. So if they're going to get credit for this on the job, is the department the one that's going to say, okay, instead of needing, and I don't know what the required number of hours right now is for a degree, teacher training degree at the university, is the department going to say, okay, this counts for, you need to go through a teacher's program at a university, but you only need X amount of credits now and in these areas, or is the university going to say, well, you come on into our program, and instead of needing Y amount, you will only need X because we will give you so many credits for on the job. So who's going to be in charge of it? Is Deed or is university? And then if it's the university, how does that work with other programs throughout the country? It's one of those things. Because I actually went through the teacher training program and went during the student teacher, the student teaching portion, I stepped out. And I'm sorry to say this on the record, but a big portion of what I took to get for the degree, I didn't feel like was really very applicable and helpful. So I'm hoping we have a way where they can be really trained, like Senator Stevens is concerned about, but it really be what they actually need. And I think a lot of that four-year program could be trimmed down because they're getting the on-the-job training. So how is that going to work, that on-the-job credit? Who's awarding it? How will it work?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, the teacher apprenticeship program will be a registered apprenticeship program. So the Federal Office of Apprenticeship will have to approve the apprenticeship program in order for it to be registered. That process, it'll be a school district that will be the sponsor, or it could be the university, but let's assume that it's a school district that will sponsor an apprentice. Their program will have to be approved by the Federal Office of Apprenticeship. Part of that process for the apprenticeship program will have to have a training program that is approved by that office to get to the point where they're fully certified at the end of the apprenticeship. The Board of Education would have to approve that training plan. And so I can imagine a situation where a school district will want to set up an apprentice program. They will work with the university to determine those types of training plans that are feasible for the university to deliver and for the school district to allow. That program would have to be approved by the State Board of Education as a non-traditional program, or as a traditional program for that matter, if the university can fit it within existing coursework. But that is the idea. It doesn't necessarily have to be the University of Alaska. It can be another university or another institute of higher learning, or it can be some other, I guess, allowable entity that generates that coursework and training plan that says that, yes, the on-the-job training that you're doing qualifies as this part of the apprentice program. But I would also just defer, before I go too far, the University of Alaska will be here before us on Wednesday, and then we will bring the office, or we'll attempt to bring the Office of Apprenticeship in and the Department of Labor to speak more to how the actual mechanics work. But the concept is that a district would be the sponsor, and they would work with some other entity to develop the coursework and training plan, which would be approved by the board.
Follow up. So that's very helpful, and that's how it would work for the paraprofessionals and the apprentice. Now, what about the teacher residency program, where somebody already has a bachelor's in another area? Now, how are they going to have to go through the whole teacher education, take all those courses, or is that also going to be streamlined, and how would that work?
Senator Hughes, through the chair. So the difference with the teacher residency program is that the student or the teacher, the new teacher will, or the aspiring teacher, I suppose, will already had the four-year degree but lack the pedagogy coursework. And so it's a similar process but without involving the Office of Apprenticeship. The school district that is sponsoring the resident would have to develop that training plan or have to approve the training plan, which, again, the board would have to approve. And those allowances for the board to make that approval were part of the bill where we made the change to allow non-traditional programs. And I'm trying to find it as I'm speaking, but it's on – I don't have it. Oh, here it is. So on the bottom of page 7. So those non-traditional programs, that's what we're talking about here, is that there are fast-track programs that are available that can be approved by the board. And if they are approved, that a resident teacher or a subject matter expert teacher, for that matter, could use those alternative pathways to certification. Again, meeting the same standard that we're talking about, but just meeting it in a different way.
And for clarification, so you talked about a school district, local school district would develop the training plan. But when you say approval of board, you do not mean the local school board, you mean the state school board. So when you're saying the word board, you're referring to the State Board of Education, correct?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Senator Hughes. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I was focused on the burden. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was focused on the burden on the department on creating exams for the subject matter expert
limited teacher certificate. I'm thinking you bring in a professional engineer that's passed a PE exam or a welding person that's passed the national certification. And I looked up 1420020I, and it actually does allow them to use a nationally certified exam for proving that. Because I was worried, is the department going to have to create these exams? That doesn't make sense. They already exist. That helps me out. What's the vision in Section 6? I didn't have a question there. I luckily dragged out the trustee statute books and answered it for myself. But in Section 6, what's the vision there? How much time does that going to take from another teacher when you have someone teaching welding or something that a mentor may or may not have the experience in that particular field? Is that just kind of the basics for how we teach as a teacher, not associated with the welding portion or whatever the course may be? What is the purpose of Section 6?
Senator Michicki, through the chair, Section 6 is a change to the 022 certificates, which is the subject matter experts, rather than the limited certificates, the Type M certificates under 025. So we're talking about somebody that has a four-year degree and has professional experience, and just giving them more time to meet the requirements, the training preparation program, and the coursework that's necessary to become fully certified. The 025 limited certificates, I think, are more aligned with the welding example that you're giving, and we're not providing that same type of change here. And I'll just defer to the department to answer the rest of your question.
Yeah, I was in the 022 section, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, but I can wait. I was asking about the role of the mentor on that subject matter expert teacher.
Okay. I can wait. Senator Begich.
Just for the record, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ed, could you give us, so what I keep finding is that if there isn't a statutory record of a definition, it gets reinterpreted by the courts down the road. I'm dealing with this on a community trust bill right now. So on page 7, line 28, 29, could you actually define on the record what you mean by non-traditional or alternative teaching education program so that we have a clear understanding of what we're actually considering there, because I could see that getting widely and wildly interpreted over time.
Mr. Chairman, I would defer to the department to answer that question.
Okay. All right. Senator Stevens.
That's just one other issue, and it has to do with the certification and the types. I mean, I think I need some little foundational information on what are the various types of certification. I always heard about Type M, not exactly sure what that is. Is there an A through L that I don't know about? So maybe just a little bit of, at some point, a little bit of definition of what those certifications are, what they mean.
Do you know what Type M stands for, Mr. King, or would you refer to the department?
Mr. Chairman, I'll set up a foundational education presentation for you on this topic, if you like.
Sounds excellent.
I think it'd be good to have. Good to know. I mean, I've heard about it for years, but never really understood it.
Yeah, I had assumed it stood for a mechanic or something like that, because it just kind of. But all right, Senator Hughes.
I was just going to say, can we have a cheat sheet with that presentation? Just tells us briefly what each one.
All right, I think with no other questions, thank you, Mr. King. Next, we will turn to Sandra Meredith from the Department of Education. Ms. Meredith is going to help us lay the foundational knowledge regarding the current teacher certification processes and pathways. We do have a presentation today on that. And Ms. Meredith, welcome back to the Senate Education Committee, and thank you for joining us today. Please state your name, affiliation, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Well, thank you all for inviting me here to do the presentation. My name is Sandra Meredith. I administer teacher education and certification for the Department of Education and Early Development. I've been working in this position for approximately 15 years, and prior to that was a classroom teacher a little bit south of here in a community called Cake. And prior to that, I was a product of the Alaska education system. I graduated from Thorne Bay a number of years ago. So I'm very pleased to be here to present to you today about the topic that has basically taken over my life for the past 15 years. So I'm going to hopefully be able to answer a lot of the questions that you posed to Mr. King today and give you a little bit of a background. So I'm not sure who's advancing my slides. Do I do that? Okay. All right.
There you go.
All right. So at the Department of Education and Early Development, we identify our mission as an excellent education for every student every day. And we take our vision out of statute. That's on the slide in front of you. My role at the department is really to provide a lot of information, resources, and leadership around teacher certification and education. And today, my role is here just to provide a lot of information to you. We, as an entity, a department, met with stakeholders a number of years ago, about 4 years ago, actually. And we worked with them to identify some shared priorities for education. And we'll focus today on number four, which is prepare, attract, retain effective education professionals. My role here, as I mentioned before, is to really help increase the understanding of our certification system, how statutes and regulations interact to create the system that we have. We will also be talking a little bit about the requirements and limitations and the level of use of each of the different certificate types. I will provide you with a definition of our understanding of the approved teacher preparation program and how it kind of morphed over the years. And then we'll talk a little bit about pathways to certification. Okay. So I always like to start with a picture to kind of give you a kind of a big overview. So before you is a graph of the number of certificates that have been issued in the past 5 years. And the bottom bar, and on my screen it's blue, represents the professional certificates. They represent about 85% of the certificates that are out there right now. Just to back up a little bit, this is as you might imagine, certification is pretty dynamic. So my database has changed daily as certificates expire and we get new ones in. So this is really a January 1 count. You can see that our overall number is about 14,000 certificates, teaching certificates. I've excluded our administrator and special service provider certificates from this count. As you look at it, and we'll dig into a couple other graphs to kind of show this a little bit more in detail, you'll see that the next, after the professional bar, the tall one, there's a small narrower band that represents the initial licensures and also the emergency certificates. And then on the very, very top, very thin, are limited certificates, things like the type M that we'll talk about here in a little bit more. So you can see kind of relatively how all of these different types of certificates play in our system right now.
And I'll get the first question. At what interval are teaching certificates renewed?
It depends. If it's a professional, it's every 5 years. The initials can be 1, 2, or 3 year certificates, and the limited certificates are typically 5 year certificates.
Thank you. Senator Begich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just noticing from 2018 to 2022, the initial certificates doubled. Is that an indicator, or does that represent or reflect the turnover that we're seeing?
I think there's some things that you can pull out of that data. I would be resident to pose my opinion on that doubling, but I'll definitely talk about it as we move forward.
And follow up?
Follow up?
The decline of about 400 certificates, 450 or so, 460 or so, professional certificates, if you could address that when you address the other issue at the same time.
You bet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Senator Begich. With no other questions, please proceed.
All right, so we're going to talk about the regular certificate. And
I'm sorry, Senator McChicken, question?
A quick question before we move on.
Jump on in.
Just when you think about the need in the state of Alaska for teachers, what is the number that satisfies the need? Do you know that? Do you have an answer to that?
How many we need a year, or how many we have in our how many new we need?
I believe the question would be how many we need to satisfy the educational requirements of the school system.
So the past 5 or 6 years, we've hovered between 7,000 and 8,000 teachers employed in our schools.
Follow up?
And I can give you more exact numbers if you like.
Well, I'm just curious what the 14,000 represents just in total. Does that mean we have enough teachers that just have chosen not to work?
There's some of that, yes, I would say. I'm fully licensed to teach, and I am not a classroom teacher right now. And I think there's a number of individuals out there that are in the same shoes as I am. They have found they've taught, they maybe have taught for a long time, and find something else to keep them occupied outside of the classroom.
Like Mr. Chairman, where I'm going is not only do we probably need alternative ways to put people in the classroom, but we also need to identify what's causing the obviously adequate number of certified teachers, what it would take to draw some of them back into the classroom. There's obviously something missing there.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Senator Machucci. I do know there are bills addressing teacher retirement. Beyond that, Senator Begich.
Thank you. On that topic, Mr. Chairman, and to through the chair to Senator Machucci, the retirement, the recruitment and retention study that the department has done, and the reason they have that hired a person to work on that, we heard a little bit from this last week, is precisely that. You know, the surveys that were prior to that initial task force coming into place began to identify a number of reasons why teachers leave the classroom. And so I think we could dig deeper into that at some point. And I think you're right, Mr. Chairman, there are other bills that are trying to address at least some of the issues identified in that study. We've done the work to identify why teachers won't stay in their jobs. We've identified those conditions. There's legislation that addresses that. And then it's up to us whether or not we pass legislation to address that.
Follow up?
On that subject, thank you. Point I'm bringing up, no matter what we do with new programs to draw teachers to the classroom, we apparently need twice as many than the number it requires to run our school districts, right? So
I don't know that we need twice as many. We just have twice as many in the state. How many? So yeah.
Can I finish that, Mr.
Chair? I'm sorry. Yes, Senator Machucci, you may finish that.
So we may add a substantial amount of new teachers through new programs, but until we identify the gaps, it looks like a pretty high proportion of them will choose not to teach over time. So there's something else we're missing that, and I'll leave it at that.
Senator Hughes?
On that point, you've heard people say, you couldn't pay me enough to do that pertaining to certain jobs. So, yes, retirement pay, other countries treat their teachers like they do physicians and scientists and engineers, very highly respected, and they pay them well. But it's also, in order for them even to get into a university program, it's very competitive. They have to be the top-notch students coming out of high school. So, you know, there's differences there. But I'm – some of it may be – pay in retirement, but I think there may be other things that our teachers are just saying, you know, this is a really tough job for me to be in the classroom with students, and I think I could go make as much money or maybe a little more money doing something else that wouldn't be so stressful. I'm just wondering, what can we do to help the culture for the teachers so it's a more rewarding and pleasant experience? I don't have the answer to that.
And Mr. King, would you take the presenter's table? Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think the answer really does come out of the teacher retention study, you know, recruitment and retention study. It identified not just retirement and the monetary issues and wage. It identified school culture, leadership culture. It identified the importance of connection to the community and feeling included with the community. It identified sort of these structural things, and it identified the support from the Department of Education to teachers, you know, beyond just the mentoring program, which, of course, underscores our SB 111 support elements and HB 164 support elements, because it has substantial support elements. So it's intriguing that the theory in the court from the Moore case identified some of these ideas, but it wasn't until we actually did the research that we discovered that not only did the theory make sense at the court level, but the evidence backed it up, that those what you're talking about, Senator Hughes, through the chair, the cultural issues, the school culture issue, the question of support, all of those are on the table here, and they're all being addressed through the work of this committee in various bills and through the actions regulatorily by regulation in the department and by the Board of Education. So I think this is a robust discussion, mm-hmm. and this bill perhaps presents one tiny piece of that, but it's a robust discussion which the commission was very good on Friday identifying to the Senate Finance Committee all these different paths that have to be pursued. But you have to start somewhere or you get nowhere. So I'm excited about the conversation, and I think it is beyond just retirement benefits. It goes to all of these other issues we must address at some point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Begich. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Chairman. So interesting, this chart and the 12,000 professional certificates, and as you said, it needs 7,000 to 8,000. So maybe starting with yourself, you have been a classroom teacher. You've retained your certification. Every 5 years, you retain that certification. If you did not, if you decided not to be recertified, would you not be on this list? Would you not be in this chart?
Through the chair, yes, Senator Stevens, my certificate would expire, and I would no longer come up on this query. Exactly.
So this chart only includes people who have recertified along the way.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So we have 12,500 certificated teachers in Alaska. We had a need of 7,000 to 8,000 in the school system. Do you know how many teachers we're employing in the current school system? Do we have 6,500, 6,000, 7,000?
Chair Holland. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. I think it's right around a little bit over 7,000 this year. I think we shared with you through, we do a turnover report every year to the legislature that gets right across the floor. It's quite a bit of there, but there's a little tiny piece that talks about teachers, and you could find that historically there.
Senator Hughes.
And for clarification, it's not 12,000 that are certificated. It's that we have to include those initial. They also have teaching certificates. So it's really 14,000 have certificates, 7,000 plus are currently teaching. So back to Senator Majicki's point, we've got half of them that are choosing not to at this time. But the fact that they're re-upping every 5 years, if they're going to re-up, is encouraging, because if we can fix some of these other things, we could bring some of them back. And that makes me very hopeful, because we're hearing fewer students are choosing the teaching profession throughout the country. And so there's a national shortage. So if we've got teachers that keep re-upping in our state, we might be able to bring them back, Mr. Chair. So that's just a note of hope.
I hate to focus this on you, but do you re-up every 5 years? Do we know that teachers are not teaching and re-upping, or is it just they haven't fallen off the list yet?
Chair Holland, as I put it to teachers that ask me when they retire or they decide to leave, whether or not they should continue with their certificate, I said, you always should have a backup plan. And so you keep your certificate, because it does take a little bit more. Sometimes for depending upon when you entered the system to return to a professional certificate, which we'll show you here in just a minute.
So with I thought we'd exhausted all the questions and comments. So Senator Stevens.
There's a figure out there of people who, like yourself, who are administrators, like principals and superintendents, mm-hmm. who are certificate, I assume, mm-hmm. And they're in this list here somewhere. Any idea the numbers we're talking about there? People are still employed by school districts or by the state board or by the, any idea of how many people we're talking about there?
I don't have through the chair, Senator Stevens, I don't have the exact number, but I can bring those to you. I would off the cuff say probably around 1,000 when you think about administrators, many of them are maintaining their teaching certificate while also a principal certificate or a superintendent certificate.
And I assume people working for the state Board of Education, yeah.
Through the chair, the department, many of the positions are require a teaching certificate in order to be part of the department.
Thanks. Around 1,000, you think?
Yeah.
Ms. Meredith, do you care to proceed with your presentation?
Well, certainly. All right. So let's talk about the regular certificate. And for this situation, I've included also retired certificates and master certificates in the conversation, just because they've pretty much met all of the professional requirements. For regular certification in the state of Alaska, it relies on two pieces. The statute is 14-2020, and the regulation is 4 AAC 12-305. In statute, the bachelor's degree or higher is the requirement. The approved teacher preparation program, which I'll talk about shortly because you don't actually necessarily read that into that, but I have an explanation for that. The basic competency requirement in reading, writing, and math. The Alaska Studies and Multicultural Coursework. We now have mandatory trainings that need to be completed, and of course, always a criminal history report. So that piece is what's contained in statutes. And then through statutes, the board has the ability to add additional requirements. And so they've, over the course of time, they have added the content area exams. And those are, for example, with me, I'm an elementary teacher, therefore I have to take the elementary exam. Then there's also a two-year teaching experience requirement, valid, and then the certificate itself is good for 5 years and is renewable with very specific requirements around what that renewal looks like. And then as a footnote, the retired lifetime certificate and the master certificate, certificated teachers also have to have met all of those requirements.
Could I ask just a quick question?
Senator Begich?
Yes, my quick question, thank you, Mr. Chairman, is I what is a lifetime certificate? I actually don't know.
Okay. Through the chair, Senator Begich, when an individual retires from our system, through statute actually, the board has been required to offer a lifetime certificate. And so what happens when you get to that point in your career, you can gain a certificate that you do not need to renew. You just have had to had that experience in the classroom, and it's, you know, good for the rest of your life.
So follow up?
All right.
So in the 12,100, whatever the number was, 199 count, that included some that don't require the 5 years.
Yeah, yes.
So and that's what this graph is. It, those two numbers combined.
Yes, actually. I pulled on the slide that you see in front of you, Senator Bankage, you can see 5 years of the professional numbers and 5 years of the lifetime and the master. And if you look at the trends, we're trending down in the professional certificates over the last few years. Retired, of course, is building. We add about 100 new certificates that way every year. And then the master is kind of level, is pretty level at about 100. And just for a little background on the master, that certificate is the one that we use to recognize those individuals that are nationally board certified. And so it aligns to that national board certificate.
Senator Begich?
I just note that the retired 2022 number of retired lifetime certificates is remarkably similar to the number of initial certificates. And you know, again, correlations are not causation, but mm-hmm. there is some I have some interest in those numbers being so close to each other.
Through the chair, the other thing to note or just to think about is kind of more a more global piece in that I'm at the back end of the baby boomers. You know, we're all getting ready. There's been a large number of us that have retired, and I think that part of the decrease in the number of professionals and the increase in the number of lifetime certificates could be attributed to some of that. So it's more than just what's necessarily happening in Alaska. It's a microcosm, but it's a much bigger picture. Just the trending nationally of employment opportunities and people moving into that phase. We don't have enough folks coming in from the backside to fill in some of those gaps that are being created.
Senator Hughes.
So is the Type M certificate the master's certificate?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes. No, the master certificate is just a master teaching certificate. The Type M is a limited certificate that we'll talk about here in just a minute. All right. Moving forward, I wanted to kind of explain to the committee what an approved teacher preparation program is referring to. So historically, when 14-20-20 was written, the bachelor's degree and the program piece was really back in the normal school days. It was all the same thing. And over time, we saw things split up. The bachelor's degree was kind of, if you had a bachelor's degree in something, the teacher preparation program started developing master programs or post-bac programs that allowed that person that had a math degree to get that additional training to become a teacher. And so the statute, the way it was written, really it combined those two pieces into one thing. And so as time moved forward and other statutes were written, for example, the one on 14-20-22, it actually addresses the idea of a teacher preparation program for that master expert certificate. But originally it was not that way, and we have not gone back as a state to revamp that piece. So we managed that change through knowing the history and knowing the fact that these are now component parts. And so we look at a teacher preparation program as a requirement of 14-20-22 based on that previous knowledge. And we recognize that altogether that a teacher requires the bachelor's or higher, the program of study that gives you that specific pedagogical knowledge you need to manage your classroom and to present materials to children in an appropriate way. And then a student teaching component where you're actually, before you're actually let loose on your own, that you have that opportunity to work with a master teacher, hopefully, and to get that classroom experience. So I think I've covered the information on that particular slide, and I have some more information to follow up with that as well. On a national level, teacher certification is that we do have relationships outside of the state of Alaska with other entities that keep us all together in a pack, so to speak, around teacher preparation program. And that group of folks is the National Association of State Directors of Teacher Education and Certification. And back in 1970, they actually were able to pull together an interstate agreement that we signed on to, and it's part of our statutes. I included that on the slide. That really talks about those different parts. And so now we also know through that agreement and that relationship on the national level that the bachelor's degree can be part of a program. Most elementary programs are bachelor's degrees in elementary ed. Or you can have the bachelor's degree prior to getting into the program. Post-bac programs and MAT programs are ones that we have here in the state through our universities. There's always a plan of study, and that plan of study is usually aligned or is always aligned to standards, either national standards or state standards or both. And I've included some of those different types of standards that are looked to when those programs are designed. We have a set of Alaska teaching standards that we use with our universities. They also use the NTAS standards that were developed by yet another entity outside of our state, but are used around the country to define what we mean by a teacher preparation program, what should be included, what things are important. So there's an understanding across the nation about what that is. There's also through state approval, either through national accreditation or through a rigorous state approval process, a review of those programs, and entities like similar to the Department of Education in other states are looking at programs offered outside of our states, aligned to these very rigorous standards to decide whether or not they have permissions to produce teachers. In California, they have that, Oregon, Washington, all over. And when we are looking for program, or when we are looking at teachers that are applying for us or for certification here in the state of Alaska, we are attending to this particular piece when we think about state approval. We also, one of the other things to note, that NASDAQ, the NASDAQ agreement, also changes up a little bit about what we think about student teaching, and realize that we can have traditional student teaching opportunities, or we can have non-traditional. Those individuals, like we recognize in 2022, that have the bachelor's degree and are employed by a district and are completing the teacher preparation pieces in conjunction with that first year of teaching. So it's kind of that's kind of the alternate pathway.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Baggins.
So for the record, when I look at page 7, line 20, or page 6, line, let me get my right page here, page 27, line 28, and says non-traditional, is that the definition?
Yes, that would be the tradition when you talk about a teacher, excuse me, through the chair, Senator Baggage. When you talk about non-traditional approaches, that's what we talk about, that teaching while learning the pedagogical knowledge you need.
And follow up.
Follow up.
And so the alternative teacher education program, what's your understanding of the definition of that in this bill?
So may I move to the next slide, Chair Holman, to respond to that?
Sure.
Why don't you hold that until we get to the next slide?
Okay. Thank you. All right. So this is kind of a break on the slide before you, is a breakdown of how we look at teacher preparation program in Alaska and in other jurisdictions. So other jurisdictions are the other states and territories of the United States. And so in Alaska, we are looking for, right now the way the statutes are written, we only recognize university-based programs. And the board has determined that to approve those programs, that they need to be CAPE accredited. CAPE accredited has a rigorous set of standards. I'm sorry, that's an acronym. Council for the Accreditation of Educator Preparation. That's the accrediting body that we use here in the state of Alaska, and many states elsewhere use the same one. We use that accreditation process because of capacity. I'm a one-person shop when it comes to these issues, and it would take a few more folks in the department to be able to do justice to really reviewing and looking at the programs in detail, in the type of detail that we would want for accreditation. In other jurisdictions, they recognize both universities and non-traditional providers, or alternative. This would be another, I should probably have used the word alternative providers here. Entities like Teach for America, the American Board of Certification of Teacher Excellence, school districts, and other educational agencies are allowed in other states to operate teacher preparation programs. They too have to go through national accreditation or a rigorous state approval process in order to be utilized.
Senator Baggage.
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you. This is exactly what I'm trying to kind of get at when I say, what is an alternative teacher? So for the record, to confirm, where you in this slide have indicated non-traditional providers, that would be alternative teacher education program. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
That is correct.
So follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So here's my concern here, mm-hmm. and that is that on that, you have Teach for America. I'm somewhat familiar with that program. It has lower standards than we do in terms of identifying quality teachers. In fact, there are not requirements for having necessarily the capacity to teach in a classroom when you first become a Teach for America student. So kids fresh out of college, you haven't necessarily had that experience. Second, school districts, which is your third item there, could be any school district in America. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Baggage, again, whatever program is being approved at would be in our jurisdiction or another, they would have to go through an approval process. So it would have to be a district that had gone through that approval process.
I understand.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, if I could
follow up.
So, and educational agencies. So what I'm looking for, I think, and with notwithstanding my discussion about Teach for America, which has tended to try to improve its instructional basis, is on those last two school districts and educational agencies, and then the very last arrow point, national accreditation of rigorous state approval process, that in the end will fall on you to determine, or your shop, if your shop's expanded by this bill. So wouldn't you need more than just you to be able to, if this bill becomes law, to analyze and to ensure that the quality, which is a question a number of us at this table have brought up, not, you know, wanting a pathway but not wanting to reduce the quality of teacher education. So walk me through, would you require more people to do that? Can we be assured that the quality of teachers, clearly they'll be going through a process of transition, but the quality of teachers would be maintained?
Through the chair, Senator Begich. The approval process would have to be developed, really, to begin with, through the department. Right now, the only means by which we recognize a teacher preparation program is through CAPE accreditation. And even in states, well, there's other states as Alaska that requires that level of accreditation. Even those that go through districts and through other educational agencies, or even ones that utilize things like Teach for America or the other ones, are often required to do that same sort of accreditation process. As far as my role in that process, there definitely will be more work for the person that's in this position, yes. There will be more of that sort of work moving forward in general, because we do have other entities in the state of Alaska that are coming on board to do this that are nationally accredited universities. So we're going to be seeing that need already to figuring out on-ramps for other types of universities to do this work as well.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hughes.
Okay, so I understand, because just thinking about the bill, the apprentice route and the residency route, a school district makes a proposal, it goes to the state board for approval. Would it also have to go before CAPE for approval?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes. At some point, yes. It takes a little bit of time for the CAPE accreditation process to work out, because you have to have data to show that you're what you're doing, what your product is able to do. For instance, an example, you all are aware that UAA lost their initial approval, or the approval for their initial programs. And now we're just working to bring them back on board. That's going to take them a number of years to gather the data to go back to CAPE to get their program fully accredited. And so there would be a point in time when it would just, the program would just have state approval, working towards being CAPE accredited.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we are, of course, responsible for both Department of Education, K-12, and the University of Alaska. And I have some concerns occasionally. You've mentioned accreditation, the loss of accreditation. We have three entities, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Southeast. They each have quite different programs. At least I should say that I know that Southeast is quite different from Fairbanks. I guess my question is, since it's our responsibility to work with the university to fund them to make sure they're doing the job we want them to do, are they doing a good job? Is the university doing a good job? Could they be doing more? And what is the relationship between the department and the University of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the university, I think, based on my observations through CAPE accreditation, because I partner and observe those processes, have very strong programs. I think that, again, bringing people to those programs, they're constantly working on recruiting folks to participate in those programs, and I think that is something that they're working on, trying to be more attractive, being more flexible. They brought more and more of their programs online, so folks in rural Alaska have more opportunities to them. I think they do a very good job at what they're doing with producing teachers for our schools. It's just that was one part of the question. The other part was our relationship, and I think I've partnered with the universities numerous times throughout my tenure at the department, and I've always found them very willing to work with us and talk to us about their programs, talk to us about the policies we're proposing at the department, you know, being that thought partner. So I think it's a very strong relationship.
Thank you for the follow-up. And we are in sort of a unique position because working with both those entities and as we progress on this, if there are things that we can do to make sure the university is doing the very most it possibly can and producing the best students it possibly can, we need to know about that. All right.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Looks like we're on slide 12.
Yes, slide 12. So, again, this is the initial teaching certificates, and I've included in this part of the presentation the 2 to 3 year certificate, which most of our brand new teachers come in with or new to the profession. They usually are just missing the 2 years of teaching experience or the Alaska Studies Multicultural. So I'm not going to talk about that as much as the other types. So So I'll start with a regulatory certificate, the out-of-state certificate. And for that one, this one is particularly for folks coming to us with a valid out-of-state teaching certificate. They have to show the department that they have a bachelor's degree or higher, provide us with that certificate, the criminal history report. And then over time, they have to meet other requirements. Right now, they have a basic competency exam, which is reading, writing, and math, that has to be completed within 1 year. And then they have, within 2 years, the Alaska Studies, the Alaska Multicultural coursework. So that they come in and they're kind of on a timeline of getting things done. They're not limited in what they can do as far as being a professional teacher. They're fully recognized as that. They're not eligible for tenure, but they are accruing time for tenure under the certificate. It can be valid for up to 3 years, but it's not a renewable certificate. After finishing this certificate, they have to move to the professional, which we've covered already.
Senator Begich.
So just to clarify, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said not eligible for tenure, but they are accruing the time toward tenure. So if they do choose to do the fourth thing, qualify for the professional certificate, then they haven't lost that time as teachers. So,
through the chair, Senator Begich, yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
All right. Please proceed.
All right. There was a question about what happens to those teachers that lose their license or, you know, don't renew their license and want to come back. Through statutes, again, there's a provision for initial reemployment. What basically has to be presented to us is we have to see them as being regularly certified previously. They, again, have to provide us with a background check through the fingerprint card. And then they're on a timeline. They have 1 year to meet any unmet requirements of the professional license. And often it's things like a basic competency exam. They were certified back prior to 1990, I think, 90. Or if their certificate, they may not have completed a content area exam. This certificate's not eligible for tenure. It's not renewable. And again, they have to move all the way to the professional when that year is completed.
Senator Begich?
So thank you. So, but this is a different situation where they do their 1 year under this certificate, they teach, and then they decide to go on, become a professional, and go back to getting the professional certification, but they don't get credited for that year, correct? Because that we wrote that law that way, I think. They don't get credited for that year of teaching toward what would now be a new retirement for them because they would have
had to suspend their current TRS retirement?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, it would depend upon whether or not that individual had actually retired or not. That if they'd actually retired and were pulling on their TRS retirement, there's other things that fall into place. They have to suspend. If they go back to teaching, they have to suspend their retirement. I don't have all the details on that, but there is some other things that occur.
How many this year are under this particular initial reemployment?
It's just a little bit further on in the slides.
I'll wait till then.
Senator Stevens?
Just to make sure I understand, so that these folks could be hired immediately. There would be no delay. They wouldn't have to wait around for anything to happen. They could start teaching immediately.
Through the chair, yes, Senator Stevens.
All right. Please proceed.
Thank you. So the initial proof of program enrollment is another certificate specific in that you find in statute. It's 1420.22. This is a certificate that is for those individuals that have a bachelor's degree. It's mentioned in the bill that's before you in Senate Bill 225. The piece that's important here is that the individual has to be sponsored by a school district, so a district has to have reached out to them and feel that they have the requirements that they need to provide instruction in their schools. The district's required to provide a mentor teacher, not necessarily somebody that's there all the time, but is able to be that resource to them. Some districts use the Alaska Statewide Mentor Project for that purpose. The individual, of course, has to hold the bachelor's degree. They have to satisfy the testing requirements, the basic competency, and the reading, writing, and math portions. They have to be enrolled in a teacher preparation program. Often they're enrolled in something like an MAT, a Master's of Arts of Teaching, or a post-bac program. And they are on a timeline. Right now it's a two-year timeline. The first one is that they have to continue to show that they have progress in that program. So they're providing us with a transcript. And then after that, at the end of that second year, they have to show us that they have completed the program and that they have completed the Alaska Studies Multicultural Coursework Requirement. There is a change to that timeline in the bill before you to extend it to a third year. It is a lot to do to be the full-time classroom, complete the pedagogical coursework in 2 years. It is a lot for folks. And then the limitations on the certificate, these individuals are limited to teach in their area of expertise. They're not eligible for tenure, but they do that time does accrue. It's valid for up to 3 years. Again, it's not renewable, and the expectation is that they're moving to their professional when they're completed with this particular certificate.
All right.
Okay. And then I also included in here the emergency certificate, because this is kind of an initial as well. Some people that haven't met the requirements for the initial, some districts are able to, or some districts are now using the emergency certificate. It went out of our regulations in 2002. We didn't have a process for it, although it was allowed for in statute. We removed it from regulations in response to federal requirements, but as things have progressed and there's been a need, the board brought that back shortly after the pandemic. While that was going on, we were reconsidering the emergency, and it's now back in place. So under that provision in 2020 and now in 4AAC 12.401, districts that are in a pinch and can't find a teacher, they have an emergency certificate that they can utilize. The requirements for that is the associate degree or an equivalent that is, again, sponsored by the school district. The district has to describe the nature of the emergency and the effort that was taken to avert it. They have to show that they've been advertising, they've been trying all possible means to fill that position with somebody fully licensed. And then they, if approved, they're also providing a mentor to that teacher. During the emergency certificate, it's not valid for tenure or eligible for tenure. It's only valid for the school year, and it's not renewable. Although they districts, the way things are written, could come back to the department to reiterate the emergency in a following school year.
Senator Begich.
And I apologize, Mr. Chairman, for asking so many questions.
That's right. I had a question. If you don't get to it, I'm going to pose it right after you.
The department, though, has to be the sign-off on the agreement to an emergency. They just emergency just can't be declared, so the department does have some due diligence here. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just,
and that was kind of along my question. So the district will define the emergency. The department will approve it, but it's irregardless of anything going on at the state level, like the national pandemic. It can be just focused right then and there, correct?
Chair Holland, yes, that's correct. And although I would say that at this point, the COVID experience that we've gone through still is part of what we're seeing in some of the requests for the emergency.
Senator Michicki.
Yeah, so you can, well, I'll wait till we get to the next slide.
Okay, there we go.
So you can see the dramatic increase in the last couple of years, and it may or may not be pandemic related. It probably is, but I would assume that's going to be a growing problem. If I guess under the statute, that can't be renewed, but that's for that individual. So if you had an emergency certification teacher, it really is doing a very good job. Although it's not renewable, they can come with a new emergency certification for that individual.
Through the chair, yes, Senator Jay.
And I'm hoping that some of those folks that came in under an emergency certification are recognized as being able to fit into one of these other programs. There's a couple that are excellent, and then there are a couple of folks that are more traditional that are bodies filling classrooms. So I that's one of the things I support about this bill is the possibility of identifying people that will be really incredible teachers that have an alternative opportunity to stick it out.
Yes.
Senator Begich.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Teacher turnover and inability to recruit be an emergency reason that a district might provide you?
Through the chair, yes, Senator Begich, that has been some of the reasoning for the emergencies.
And do follow up. Do the numbers, the 260 falling to 193, are they predominantly indicative of the COVID issue? And should we expect to see a decline then in the coming year from the 193 number?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I really don't have a crystal ball in that regard. I would say that one of the things I think is happening, though, is we are using the emergency often for individuals that are just having trouble getting paperwork together. We have some people coming in from out of country for J-1 visas, and that over the course of time, they're able to get that documentation together so they can move into a regular certificate. I think I also have, well, I've seen just annotative or just, you know, incidental where the folks with the emergencies are taking advantage, as Senator Michicki indicated, into getting into one of the other program, a teacher preparation program. So there's a lot of different things at play. I'm not really sure what the future holds, though.
Just to follow up to the chairman, and that is what my concern and reason I asked the question in sort of the two parts, is I don't want us to start using a rarely used exception as somehow a norm because we found a loophole. And I just want to be sure we're maintaining, you know, a strict application of when we say there's an emergency. There's Western Alaska, the J-1 issue, but Western Alaska has a number of teachers that have come in from the Philippines recently. They're superb, I might add. But the issue with the visas is because of State Department delays, as I understand it. And so I get that. But perhaps we should get a breakdown from the department on the reasons for the emergency numbers. And I would suggest maybe that would be something the committee might.
Duly noted. Thanks, Senator Begich. Ms. Meredith, do you care to continue?
Thank you, Chair Holland. Moving forward, I just wanted to show you a kind of a breakdown of the different types of certificates, the numbers. You can see an increase in the out-of-state certificates. That's the OOS. They've gained, 100% increase over the last 5 years. Our program enrollments are creeping up, and also our reemployment had a jump this year as well. One of the things that I would just also put out here about the out-of-state, we have about 30% of those individuals that come in from out-of-state that do not get a second year on their certificate. And if you remember back to the slide about what they have to do time-wise, is that it's a basic competency exam. And so we have about 30% of those folks that are certified with us each year through the out-of-state license are not coming back. And I, again, it's just a piece of information for all, but we do have some veteran teachers that are coming into our state that are not passing the basic competency, either refusing to do so or not being able to do so. So I just wanted to put that out there for you.
Senator Hughes, you still have your question?
I think she answered it because when she started, you were saying the 997 that came in, 30% aren't coming back. It's because they failed the competency exam.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I wouldn't say that they failed. They did not provide that to our office, and they did not get a second year on that certificate. A few of them, maybe more than a few, have decided either not to do that requirement or failed it.
Okay, thank you.
They may have just decided to not pursue teaching in Alaska.
Exactly. There's a lot of incremental things that, play into the decision whether or not to stay here.
All right. Thank you. Please proceed.
All right. Our early career teachers do receive supports from their districts through inductions and mentoring projects. UAF, K-12 Outreach have for a number of years, and the legislature has in previous years supported them financially to provide ECTs in our state. That's their acronym for early career teachers. Supports, which included an assigned mentor that would fly out and do that work. We also have in K-12 Outreach Educator Rising, which is a program targeted at paraprofessionals, high school teachers or high school students that want to become teachers, that has grown over the course of time. And I would really encourage the committee to take an opportunity to reach out to K-12 Outreach on those programs in particular. They can provide you with numbers and the means by which they're using to be supportive. All right, now to the little tiny band at the very beginning on the graph that I provided you. This is the band for those type M's, type I's, and type W's. And I'll talk to you a little bit before I move on about that whole lettering system. Back in the day, when I first was certified, I had a type A certificate, which was a teaching certificate. Type B's are the special or the administrative certificates. The type C's are the special service provider certificates. And then they just continued on. There's a few in between a C and an M for different parts and pieces, but they just had a lettering system basically for our database, for more just a way to keep things organized.
So there actually was a J and a K and an L that led to the M?
I don't think they used them all sequentially, but yes.
I can see M standing for mentor
So the type M itself is really the limited certificate that's in statutes under 14-20-25. And this allows and has allowed for a number of years individuals with subject matter expertise in the three areas, Alaska Native Language and Culture, Military Science, and vocational and technical, or now CTE, another acronym for us, to provide their expertise to our students. And this is We see growth in this, especially in CTE over the course of time. I actually have the breakdown here momentarily of the number of certificates that have been valid over the last 5 years. These individuals are also required to do the background clearance, just like everyone else, and the mandatory trainings that are in statute. The limitations are that these are district-sponsored certificates. The teachers must only teach in the areas where the expertise has been provided to the department and have been, we look for work histories, we look for letters of support or recommendations. The state board or the school boards are involved, the local school boards are involved in determining that they want to hire these individuals. The certificates are valid for 5 years and they are renewable. The Type I certificate is a regulatory certificate that allows kind of what we're looking at with the Senate Bill 225, except that the certificate does have some limits on it that 225 would remove. So the Type I is a certificate that is used for individuals that do not yet have a bachelor's degree, do not have teacher preparation programs, but do have some experience as paraprofessionals, and more particularly until a few days ago, expertise in the local native culture, that they're doing things like dual enrollment or a dual language enrollment or immersion programs. So these individuals that are certified through this particular mechanism are able to, it's kind of a blending of a Type M where they're doing the Alaska Native languages and cultures in conjunction with a regularly certified classroom teacher and sharing kids during the day so that the individual students are getting the Alaska indigenous language and culture experience and also getting the English instruction in reading, writing, and math. So limitations around this, they're only to teach in that area of expertise. That expertise grows over time and additional responsibilities are given to the individual so that they're taking on, similar to what the teacher residency program would do, more responsibilities with the group of students. The certificate requires that the university and the school district are involved in determining the level of responsibility, and the individual teacher under the certificate would have to have a cooperating teacher and a mentor. The certificate is valid from year to year, and the individual has to show that they're making progress towards that bachelor's degree. The difference between this certificate and what's proposed in Senate Bill 225 is that during the last year, during the student teaching experience, that an individual that might be under this type of certificate, they would actually be able to be considered the teacher for the purposes of compensation. They would be doing the work of the teacher in clinical experience or student teaching experience, but being able to be compensated at the same time for that. All right, and so what happens for these individuals? If they want to move from a limited certificate to the regular certificate, well, they have to complete all of those components that we talked about before, the bachelor's degree, the teacher prep program, and taking the content and the competency exams. Before you are the numbers of those certificates that have been valid on January 1 over the past 5 years. You can see that we do have some increases in the numbers of CTE certificates. It's not a big bump, but a little bit. Same with the Alaska Language and Culture certificate, a little bit of a bump. The military science one, it's kind of hovers around 30. It hasn't really grown much over the last few years. And the associate has fluctuated a bit over the past few years. One thing that I did not mention was the World Language Certificate, and that's another regulatory certificate that's in lines with the idea that we had some difficulties in our immersion programs filling those, and this was a certificate to help create a pathway or for those individuals with that expertise as they didn't fall under the limited type M because it wasn't an indigenous language. So we mostly see the limited W in the Anchorage School District and MATSU. There was also a question about substitute teachers that I wanted to make sure that.
Senator Stevens?
I understand. So this, the limited, it's not a way to avoid the requirements of being a certificate teacher. It's an avenue. It's a way to get started, but it's not, but they still have to follow the requirements of every other certificated teacher in the end. Or is it a way around the rules?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the Type M does not require them to go on to become a fully licensed teacher. It's recognizing their expertise and saying that we value that expertise to the extent that we're willing to provide them with a license so that our students can access their indigenous language and culture, the military science for our ROTC, and the CTE areas that we know are so essential. And it's really hard for somebody who's a journey, carpenter, to, they have all of that experience. You know, they've trained people that worked under them. And if we are so lucky to bring them to our schools for them to provide that same expertise to our high school students, it's really hard to convince them to go back and get a four-year degree. So just to qualify for certification. So individuals under those limited certificates are able to maintain those limited certificates from now until they decide no longer to participate in the education system.
Senator McChicky?
Yeah, I know through the chair, Senator Stevens is always very concerned about cutting corners on those certification. But I just wonder at what point you attract, and I know that's why we have an area. There are some amazing people out there that don't know they're good with young people yet. So when we know we have those gaps, you have to look at things differently. You have to find a way to get the very best people in the classroom. And I don't, just an opinion, does this bill get you where you need to go on getting folks certificated once they identify that they have the potential to be best in class in the classroom, even though they've been doing something else for the last 25 years?
Through the chair, Senator McChicky, I think it provides what I think is most important is pathways, additional pathway. Right now, the way things are structured, it's very difficult for an individual who's a paraprofessional to go back to school. And this is potentially a pathway to get them to the place where they can be fully licensed. That is like on the bigger scene around teacher certification across the nation. That's what we talk about is different routes that really address all of the different possible scenarios out there that we have of people that really want to become part of our system and, work with students and, really move them forward. And I think what the bill does is, the problem is this big and we're going to find solutions for it a little bit here and a little bit here and a little bit there. This is definitely one of those pieces I think will definitely get us moving in a direction that would be good for everyone in Alaska.
I'll just remind the committee members we're so close to the end of this, but Senator Hughes.
Oh, just up on the graph there, the only one that is required to be working towards a bachelor's and assumably a teacher certificate is the I. But those can be valid from year to year. Are we actually seeing the teachers or the paraprofessionals who are being granted an I, are we seeing them consistently become full-fledged certified teachers? Or do we have a situation, because we talked about it, that we work around, are we granting these year at a time I I certificates, you know, for 10, 15 years to individuals, and they're not actually getting their bachelor's? Are we truly transitioning them to be teachers, fully certified?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the limited Type I has just really been started to be used again by Lower Kuskokwim School District and hasn't been used for probably much more than the 5 years that we have up there for you to see. I think because Lower Kuskokwim School District is the school district that's been utilizing that pathway the most, they would have the best information for you. I don't have enough depth of data to really be able to decipher the answer to that question at this point.
Thank you.
And we're talking 38 to 14 teachers out of 14,000, correct?
Yes.
I mean, this is really a small sliver of the percentage of teachers out there.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, just real quickly, I know it's getting short. My time is short here. So in regulations, we define substitute teachers as short-term and long-term teachers. For short-term, schools determine the minimum qualifications for those individuals. We do not broach that subject in regulations or in statutes. Those individuals are may teach for up to 20 days. Their level of responsibility really depends upon the situation and duration of the assignment, and is very much governed by local control at the local school board. For long-term substitutes, those are for individuals or for situations where the district knows that the position is going to be vacant for more than 20 days. They're required by regulations to find a fully certified teacher for those positions. Either it could be an initial license, a professional, or the retired lifetime certificate. And again, the responsibility is really determined by the nature of the leave. And most districts actually are hiring those individuals under the provisions of their negotiated agreement. So often they're compensated as a fully certified teacher should be compensated. Lastly, I just want to really quickly show you, we do issue a number of other types of certificates around teacher preparation. We do issue student teaching authorizations, which allows for that year of student teaching. And you can see we've kind of hovered around 200 student teachers per year. We also issue an alternate route certificate that brings regularly certified teachers into teaching special ed, and it allows them to serve as that special ed teacher while they're adding a new special ed program to their certificate. There were other questions that were asked for today. I'm not sure if we have time to cover those at this point.
Did you want to remind us of like the questions in particular you care to address?
Yeah, so that we had information on micro-credentialing, fast-track teacher preparation programs, which I kind of discussed in that alternate path, and then how endorsements are issued. I didn't know if any of those topics were things you wanted me to cover quickly.
Senator Begich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe we could get, since there's information that's been collected, we could get that in the form of maybe a memo or a letter from the district, department. Make your job easier.
Senator Michicki.
We never clarified the gap question, but I'd like to know where the gaps exist on being able to have certificated teachers in classrooms, how they're being filled. Is that something that, I mean, we know how many certificated teachers we have in the state. We know how many are certified under alternative programs. I don't know where the different people are working and where the most difficulty lies, but if that's something that's readily available, I'd like that included in the answers to the committee as well, Mr. Chairman, if that's possible.
Ms. Barth?
Yeah. Through the chair, most certainly can try to run some numbers for you based on our staff accounting and our certification database.
All right. Well, Ms. Meredith, thank you for the presentation and answering our numerous questions today. And thanks to Mary Gwen and Jake for hanging by a little late today. We will now set Senate Bill 225 aside. Is there any other business before the committee? And seeing none, our next meeting is Wednesday, March 9th at 9 a.m., and we will be adjourned at 10:35.